Accession number 30623, reel 8.
Accession number 30623, Mr. Terry O'Leary, reel 8. Now, the next thing is you go to Whitehall, which is HMS President 2. It's a shore station.
It is indeed, yeah,
and it's in Whitehall.
Yes.
Now, that was in May 46, you seem to have started it,
yes,
there. To August 46, not, yeah, you know. What do you remember? I know you don't remember much about this. What do you remember about it?
Well, I remember that I was living at home, so we had our ration cards, which my mother was very pleased about, because the butcher would always give her a little extra when he saw it was stamped Royal Navy. And I used to travel up on the underground with a little brown case to do my watch, as they called them.
I know you don't remember your hours. What do you remember of what you were doing at the wireless station?
I was working, as we called it, Newfoundland. That was I was transmitting and receiving from Newfoundland on the wavelength. That seemed to be the my.
Do you know what you were transmitting or receiving, or was it just?
Yes, I can't recall. It was certainly not coded. It was plain language. But what the messages consisted of, no, I can't recall.
Anything you remember else about that? Because you weren't there that long, were you? It seems to be from, as I say, May 46.
Yeah, no, it was just a relief to get away from, for me, from Chatham Barracks, because everybody was coming home for demobilisation at Chatham, and as I think I mentioned before, it was grossly overcrowded. And so a draft.
Actually, you'd been at Chatham from when you got back from Trieste.
Yes, that's right.
Well,
yeah.
We didn't mention it. So it was very overcrowded.
Oh, terrible. People were sleeping. One of the main ones I know was they had an air raid shelter, and there was over 1,000 bodies down there, and the air was putrid. Oh, it was absolutely disgusting. People were sleeping in their messes if they could. You just crash down anywhere, you know, but it was quite a relief to, and of course you could get home on, again, they used to, just to disperse the people, send them home on a Friday while as I mentioned, I think before, you go away on Friday after tot time at lunchtime, and you have to be back Monday morning before first parade, and that seemed to be one of the things. They were just trying to disperse the people because there were so many waiting for demobilisation.
Now, why? That's the end of your service with the Navy in August. Why were you? Why did you leave? Was it just normal demobilisation?
Yeah, you had a number. I can't recall what mine was, but everybody was given a number, and when your number came up, as they say, you then were sent to a clothing store somewhere. I think it was in Surrey or somewhere, where you were kitted out with civilian clothes and your naval stuff was taken off you. Yeah.
Did you ever think of staying in the Navy?
No, I didn't. Because,
why not?
Well, because my last impression was Chatham Barracks, and I was absolutely appalled at the state of what was there. You know, I mean, it was bedlam. I thought so anyway. I don't know if anybody else thought so, but to me it was... there were so many bodies there, you know, there were thousands of people milling around, and so
now what were you going to do when you came out, because what you did is quite a surprise, you know, but
well,
what did you think you were going to do?
Well, I hadn't a clue what I was going to do, but my brother was in the Royal Air Force, and we got demobilised approximately at the same time, although he had been in considerably longer than I, and one got an amount of money, just trying to think of what they called it. It was a on demobilisation, because of your service, you gave given money, and I can't recall.
Sort of war gratuity.
That was it, precisely. It was a war gratuity. That was exactly what it was. And so my brother, who lived at home with me then, we just decided to live it up for a while, and spent our gratuities going out on the razzle, and, you know, just what the young chaps did, you know. And as far as work's concerned, I can't recall working after. I just, he said he was thinking of going back into the RAF, And I said, well, I met some chaps in the army in Trieste, and I think I'll join a Irish regiment that I met out in Trieste.
Now, which one?
Sorry?
Which one?
Oh, it was the London Irish Rifles. They still have a company now over the south side of the river.
And how did you go about joining them?
Well, I went back to the same recruiting office in Acton, where I enlisted for the Royal Navy, well, where I was called up for the Royal Navy. And, of course, having to take my discharge papers and saying I wanted to go into the Army, the Army recruiting officer said, no, you don't, you want to go back in the Navy. And he trotted me back down to the Navy, and I explained I didn't want to go in the Navy. And I went to and fro. In the end, they decided that my mind was made up and said, yes, OK, you can, you know, we'll accept you into the Army, but you're going to the Royal Corps of Signals. And I said, well, if I wanted to stay in signalling, I would have gone back in the Navy. I would just want to join the infantry, and I know the regiment. And I said, the London Irish Rifles. And he said, well, unfortunately, the London Irish Rifles is a territorial unit, and it's been disbanded since the end of the war. He said, but you can go into their parent regiment, which is the Royal Ulster Rifles, whose depot is in Ballymena in County Down, Northern Ireland. So I opted for that.
And what happened? That was in October, 1946. 46. So you'd only been out a month.
Yes, I wasn't out very long.
Now, so what happened? You seemed to go to Ballymena, St. Patrick's Barracks, is that
yes,
right?
Yes, that's correct, yes.
And what was your reception when you got to St. Patrick's Barracks?
Well, it was quite good.
It's the depot, isn't it?
It is, the regimental depot of the Royal Ulster Rifles. It was good because the first person I saw face to face was a company sergeant major, Lynch, his name was. They used to call him Stoker Lynch, I remember that, I don't know why. And he said, I know you. And I said, well, I don't think so, sir, I don't know you. And he said, well, I've seen you before somewhere. And he asked me where I was, and I said, well, I've been in the Royal Navy, because obviously I had the medal ribbons, not the actual medals. And I said, I was in Italy, in Trieste. And he said, well, I was in the London Irish Rifles. And, of course, that was where he had seen me, but he recalled it and I didn't.
Now, you went through basic training there. Firstly, what were the conditions like? Because if we compare it with the Navy, what were the barracks like?
Oh, very good. Yeah, they were. I think they were called Belisha barracks, built by the War Minister, Hawke Belisha, who had something to do with the Belisha beacons, I think, later in life. And they were good. Brick, good, clean.
What about the food? How did that compare with Navy food?
Well, the food I found, you know, adequate.
You're not bothered, you know.
No, food.
It was all right for you.
Yeah. I just wanted to get on and do soldiering. Now,
tell me about the training, because, you know, how it differed.
Oh, it was much more. A lot of drill parades, a lot of bullying of equipment.
Now, the drill, was it any different, the drill?
Our drill was entirely different to the...
In what way?
Well, we were a rifle regiment, and we marched faster than the ordinary infantry. They did 120 paces to the minute, and still do, I believe. And our pace was 144 to the minute.
That's a light infantry pace, yeah.
Well, it is a light but it was...
We weren't
light infantry, we were a rifle regiment. There seemed to be some classical difference between... Everyone said, no, you're in a rifle regiment, you're a rifleman.
And did you get used to that pace?
Yes, quite quickly, yeah. And we had to shout out things, for example, like when we were marching and we were about turn, you had to shout out the steps, like he would shout about turn, and you go 1, 2, 3, 4, and I used to do it rather louder than anybody else, because having been an ex-serviceman, you know, I was a bit more outgoing than the young lads who were, 18 years old, who had joined up not national servicemen, I might add. They were.
No, it's before that, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, what about the weapons training? What do you remember about that?
Oh, well, yeah, I was. I loved weapons training. The drill, rifle drill, was entirely different. Instead of carrying the rifle at the slope, which is on the left shoulder, we used to carry ours at what they called the trail. So you stood to attention, and on the command, quick march, the rifle came from alongside your leg. You threw it so it was horizontal with the ground and caught it at the point of balance. And you marched with it at the point of balance, sort of fore and aft down by your side. Lots of things were quite different.
What about the actual weapons training, shooting things? And
yes, yeah.
Take me through it. What you do?
Well, I started off with, they put you on a 2-2 range with a 2-2 rifle, which, you know, I consider myself quite adept at, and thought I was, well, I was quite good with the rifle. And then 303, then we did Bren gun and bayonet practice, although in our regiment they weren't called bayonets, they were called, or in the rifle regiment, they were called swords. So instead of the term or the order fixed bayonets, you would be told to fix swords. And all this seemed quite, you know, I was quite.
What do you think of the Bren?
Yeah, I found it quite good. In fact, later on in life, I did shoot at Bisley with the regiment on the Bren gun. Didn't do as well as we hoped, but.
What about hand grenades, things like that?
Yes, 36 hand grenade, taught how to clean them, because when they came in the box, they were quite greased up, so all the grease had to be removed. The fuses were in metal tins separate, so you fused the grenades by unscrewing the base cap, putting the fuse in, and replacing the base cap. And when they exploded, when you threw them, it exploded. You could definitely hear the base cap, because it consisted of about a piece of metal about a quarter an inch thick and about inch and an eighth, and you could hear that actually whistle through the air as after the bang, you know.
You mentioned getting ready for kit inspection, you know, a bull.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Oh, yeah, well, they were very, very fussy about kit inspection, you know, almost to the ridiculous, really.
In what way? Tell us how you prepare.
All your gear had to be, you know, each room had an iron, and you had to iron all your gear. Your socks had to be folded a certain way. All your kit previously on first joining had your regimental number in it, because you had been given your regimental number. And so your boots were stamped around the anklet with, or you stamped them yourself with the metal stamps with your regimental number. And every item of equipment had your regimental number. Some of it is in cloth that you had to sew in, like for socks, for example. Boot laces, your spare pair of boot laces had to be wound in a circular way. It was just to teach you to look after your kit, and I didn't find a problem with it. I never got called over. I mean, I have seen beds turned over when a company sergeant major or an officer has decided that the kit was below par, and they would just turn the bed to one side so that the kit was scattered all over the place, and the chap was told to redo it and have it done by 2 o'clock, and they would come back to inspect his kit. But I didn't find a problem, you know. I just used to do as I was told, keep it low profile, and got on fine.
What about PT, very form?
That was, having been in the Navy, I hadn't done a lot of physical training, so I would say that when I came out of the Navy at, 22, I think I was, yeah. I was a little older than the remainder, who were 18, and I found that, to start with, the PT very, very hard. I don't think I was as physically fit as I should have been. For example, they used to do what they called frog jumping. You bent your knees, and then you had to leap forward in a crouch position, and I found it terribly straining on the muscles. But after a while, I got over that. We had cross country running, and after a while, I was okay. Yeah.
Did you do any tactical training? You know, sort of not, mock attacks.
No. This was just basic training.
Now, how did you get on with the other recruits? Because a lot of them, as you mentioned, would have been 18. How did you fit in as an old man of 22?
Well, I never had any problem. They used to call me Sailor, and things tend to stick, don't they? Until after a little while, that disappeared, and I became known as Mike O'Leary, and I've been known as Mike O'Leary for everybody apart from, and still people still call me Mike O'Leary here.
That's your army name, as well.
It is.
So, but you got on well with them.
Yes, I had no.
Did they look to you for guidance?
No, I never sort of put myself out to guide, and they never asked for guidance. I was just a recruit, perhaps a little older, but just a recruit.
What about the instructors? How did you get on with them?
I got on very well with the instructors. They did treat me with a little bit of deference. For example, sometimes if there was an arduous job to do, I recall a sergeant gave me the job of cleaning the windows in his barrack room or outside his barrack room. They treated me with a little bit of leniency, I thought.
Were they good instructors?
Oh, yeah, very, very good, yeah. Yeah, they were, yeah, very
now,
good.
Now, you were there, 14 weeks? That's yes, to December 46. Yes. Now, what's your next move? It looks like it's to Ammar Barracks. So
yeah, I went on leave and then had to report to Omar Barracks, where this big bomb exploded few years ago.
Who were you joining there? Was that the actual battalion?
No, that was the North Irish Training Brigade. There were two battalions, 1st and 2nd battalions, and the 1st battalion, I think, I'm open to correction here, I know one battalion was in Valak, in Austria. After it left Trieste, it went to Valak in Austria. And
now, in your notes, you've got Coty Roan. What's that?
Sorry?
Omar Barracks, Coty Roan, Coty, County Tyrone. Sorry,
yeah.
Just being stupid, sorry about that.
Yeah.
Now, what were you doing with the Northern Irish Training Brigade?
I went there and I wasn't there all that long and I got promoted to Lance Corporal.
That seems to be March 47.
Yes.
So now, what were you actually doing? I'll come to the promotion.
When I first got there, I was attached to training. They specifically trained there. North Irish Training Brigade trained for the three Irish regiments. You had the Royal Ulster Rifles, the Royal Irish Fusiliers, and the Royal Inniskilling Fusiliers. And they trained incoming soldiers. I'm not sure whether at that stage whether National Service had started.
I don't think so.
Do you know when it started?
No. 48, I think, but I don't know.
No. You were training, you had platoons of about 35 incoming recruits, and they were designated to one of the three training battalions. And so each platoon trained their own regiment.
Now, you were being trained, you were going through your continuation training there, weren't
you? I was, but I moved through that pretty quickly before, once I was promoted Lance Corporal.
Did it make a difference when you promoted? That's in March.
Yeah. I just felt, rather proud that I'd got my foot in the first rung of the ladder and was determined that in the army I was going to be, or endeavour to be, the smartest and the most knowledgeable soldier. I really felt it was a different life. I really felt you were more of an individual in the army, and that's what I felt. And they gave you a lot of history of the regiment, and you really felt that you were part of a family. That was my impression. As a Ulster rifleman, they did give you a lot of information of when it was first formed and its battle honours, and it seemed like a family, because quite a few of them were obviously from Ulster. There were a number who had come up from the Republic of Ireland to join. So you had a diversity of chaps, some from the north, some from the south, a couple of Englishmen like myself, and I just wanted to be the best.
Now, you were given a training role, weren't you? You seem to have been tell me about that. You stopped being a trainee and started
started training. I was allocated to the platoon that looked after the Royal Ulster Rifles intake.
So you became an instructor?
On a low level. For example, if the sergeant was doing drill, I would be the one he would call out to demonstrate the various moves. And as a lance corporal, because you had a lance corporal, a corporal, and a sergeant, drill sergeant. I was proud to do it. I enjoyed it.
Anything else about your time there?
In Omagh, yes. Later on, I can't recall precisely when, I was promoted a corporal.
That looks like September 47.
Yes, I was promoted corporal and given a squad of my own. So I had myself and a lance corporal, as opposed to a sergeant. I was given
Now, how did you get on with the recruits? I mean, you'd been one not long before. How did you get on with them?
Yeah, fine. You know, I had no problem. We used to, discipline was the main thing, but I found that, for example, the men from the Republic, some had been in the Irish Army, Free State,
Era
Army, yeah, the Oglana Éireann, as they called it, and they could speak. They learnt some of the battalions spoke nothing but Gaelic, so I afforded myself of learning Gaelic for some of the orders that I was given. I didn't give them in Gaelic, but I was interested enough to learn the Gaelic for.
How long did that take you?
Well, it was just a question of picking it up, and which I still remember. I know that. Although we say fixed swords, they say fixed bayonets, and the Gaelic for that is nascio bayonete, and ti nascio bayonete means unfixed. Things like that.
So you didn't learn to speak the language. You learned the orders.
That's it. Yeah, I just asked them what would be the Irish for when we were dismissed. What's the Irish for so and so? And these chaps would tell, and I'd repeat it like a parrot until I. Learned it just for my own. I do recall that with my accent and shouting, I had a young second lieutenant who they get allocated to these platoons, and this asked me why I wasn't given this officer asked me, why aren't you giving the orders in English? And I said, I am giving the orders in English. And he said, well, it doesn't sound like English to me. And I said, well, I'm sorry, sir, but I'm speaking English and they understand it, even though some of them are Irish and some from Northern Ireland, but they understand it because our drill was completely different. For example, which I don't think this young chap who had been, well, young officer who had been posted, realised, for example, we would be standing easy, as they call it in the army, and you would have your rifle out in front of you at near the top, near the muzzle, and when in the infantry, they call out squad, and you move your hand down the rifle to the first outer rim of the band where the sling fits, and then they would say squad shun. We never did that. Our word of command was eyes front, which you then stood ready to be called to attention, and then you called out number one squad, and it was on the word squad, or once you were in the battalion, rifles, and that's how you came to attention. So the drill, the foot drill, was completely different, and because it was, I felt superior to the normally normal infantry, although we weren't, of course. But
now, how long were you with them at Ballymena?
Omar. Long enough to meet my wife, who was serving in the ATS. She came up from Dublin to join the British Army, and I met her, and we were. She was in attached to the North Irish Training Brigade. She wore our RUR cap badge on her breast uniform, and we were caught in Omagh. And that was why we were most upset when we heard that Omagh had been bombed, because we used to visit a local hostelry down there, and that was one of the places that got blown.
But you didn't get married at the time. You were just caught at the time.
Yeah,
yeah. Now, so September 47, you're corporal, and then it looks like February 48, you go to Ballykinlar camp. Now, who are you joining there?
Well, Ballykinlar camp was at that particular time, it was still part of the training brigade, but they were waiting then for the regiment, the Royal Ulster Rifle battalions, to come back to Northern Ireland from Europe.
So you just were carrying on the same word, only at Ballykinlar?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Anything happening there?
I'm not sure if I should say this, but there was one particular funny time where some of the chaps I got weren't, they were not what I would call real army material, but...
some of the recruits?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I had a young lad from Liverpool, of Irish descent, but he was a little bit, what I consider to be, a little bit slower than the rest, and of course the squad soon got to recognise that and tried to take the rise out of him, which I immediately stamped on. But he was slow, very slow in picking things up, and one day it was raining and I was doing weapon training in one of the huts because it was raining outside, and I was giving instruction on the Sten gun, and I was explaining that there were three ways of firing the Sten gun: from the shoulder using the sights, from the shoulder roughly aligning the barrel on the target, and from the waist sense of direction. And I ran through this time and time again after stripping down the Sten gun, but I kept emphasising the three positions of firing, and who should come in but the commanding officer with the adjutant. He was having a stroll round and decided to look in on the weapon trainings. And of course, I wanted to let this young Murta, his name was, shine. And so I asked him to stand up and tell me the three methods of firing the Sten gun. And he said, from the shoulder using the sights, from the shoulder roughly aligning the barrel on the target, and from the waist sense of humour, which didn't go down too well with the CO. He raised his eyes to heaven and told me to carry on and walked out. But I've never forgotten that. I thought it was quite funny myself, but perhaps he didn't. But apart from that, where else did